Hello?
Blog Talk
Hi,
Radio.
Rod Miller. We're almost done.
Okay.
Song and paddles and to sing. Red and black ships trade water 10,000 years long before. Anchored Spanish slave ships learned the magic current so shore to shore.
Blog Talk Radio, and it is so good to be here. I just want to thank you all for listening and being here with us each week here on Blog Talk, and we have so many things to be thankful for and grateful for. And I just want to say that we have a really spectacular show let you all know that our special guest is Radmila Cody, and in a little while we will be speaking with James Nottage, and he is from the Idlejord Museum in Indiana. Today's program, we are going to talk about red-black related through history. And this is a groundbreaking exhibition. It's exploring the shared history between African and Native Americans. And that will be opening this Saturday, February the 12th, in Indianapolis, Indiana. And it includes an object-based exhibition on the subject created by the Idlejord Museum and the Smithsonian's traveling panel show, Indivisible, African Native American Lives in the Americas.
And Penny?
Yes, Thunder.
Yes, this is Thunder. How are you?
I am good.
Yes, we want to tell our listening audience we are so pleased that you were able to join us, and we have to confess that we're having a slight bit of technical difficulty, which caused us to be, you know, a little bit at odds with technology today.
Yeah, it was a real challenge, believe me.
we should have had
it on video.
Well, I'll tell you, we could do stand-up comedy tonight, but it's not really a funny sort of a topic that we're dealing with here, and I want to thank you for joining our indigenous circle here on Talking Feather Radio. And Penny, you know, here at Talking Feather Radio, we deal with indigenous issues globally, and we showcase indigenous knowledge and practices in our global village, and spirituality and the bond of indigenous people with the land are embraced and celebrated. And we love to be able to highlight, as we will do tonight, the achievements and challenges facing American Indians, African Americans, West Indian Caribbean people, and indigenous people throughout the world. And Penny, our topic tonight is one that is deeply profound, I think, and provocative and extremely interesting. And it is red-black, related through history. And I don't know if you've had a chance to share with them what that topic is really all about, Penny.
I gave a slight overview that this will be happening. It's opening this weekend, February the 12th, and it's in Indiana at the Edeljoog Museum.
Of American Indians and Western Art.
That's right.
Yes. And we have with us as our special guest James Nottage, who is the chief curator at the Edeljoog Museum. And we are pleased and privileged to also have joining us in our Indigenous circle Radmila Cody, traditional Navajo recording artist, Indie Award winner, multiple Native American Award nominee, and international performer. So we are going to have an exciting, stimulating discussion with Mr. Nottage and Radmila Cody about Red and Black, the American Indian, the indigenous of the Americas, and their African-American brothers and sisters who are related, and we are blended today as a result of many things that occurred through history, which we have really not been informed about fully. And that's what this exhibit is all about, this groundbreaking exhibition, which is exploring this shared history between the African and the Native Americans.
Well, what I'm going to do right now is connect with the Great Spirit and say the prayer in the language of the Wampanoag people. Kitanet, Numagani Witumawak. Oki, Numakaniwitamog. Okamas, Nupashat, Numakaniwitamog. Wuta Chikidiasun, Nupawas, Numakaniwitamog, Tabat Nuayan. Numakaniwitamog, Eut no Shik Oki, Wampanayo, Sawanayo, Patanayo, Nanamayo. Great Spirit, I offer this tobacco. Oki, Mother Earth, I offer this tobacco. Grandmother Moon, I offer this tobacco. Grandfather Sun, I offer this tobacco. I offer this tobacco to the four directions, to the east, to the south, to the west, to the north. With that, I say thank you, Katabatush.
Yes, aho, Matakuyo Asin. We honor all our relations, and today and this evening here on Blog Talk Radio, we really pull together all our relations because we are so connected and interdependent. So, you know, that's what we're going to be discussing today. And Penny, why don't you help put this topic and context for us.
Okay, when Africans were hunted, captured, and removed from their villages, they were shackled and forced to endure deplorable conditions on slave ships. And then when they arrived in North America, the interactions between people of African and Native American heritage created a combined history of conflict, cooperation, cultural growth, destruction, and survival. And since 2001, the Edeljoog Museum of Western American Indian
American Indians and Western Art.
I'll get it.
All right. I hope so.
But it has pioneered research on the subject and has drawn together important art and artifacts that demonstrate shared traditions found in history, genealogy, food, dress, music, and occupations. And some American Indians held black slaves, and others helped them escape. And sometimes there were intermarriages and a blending of traditions, red, black, and also explored issues of race and personal identity. And so the question is, who am I and who gets to say so? And with that, I would like to introduce James Nottage, who is the chief curator of the Edeljoog Museum. Welcome to the Talking Feather.
Hello, Mr. Nottage. Are you with us? Yes. Well, we also have in our Indigenous circle Radmila Cody. And we know Radmila is here. Are you not, Radmila? Good evening.
Got Can you hear me?
We can hear you beautifully. We can hear you. Your voice is wonderful. Songbird. And Radmila Cody is a traditional Navajo recording artist. As we said, an Indie Award winner, multiple Native American Award nominee, and international performer who continues to maintain her Navajo culture by recording music that children sing with pride and to the lyrics of Dene Elders. And those Dene Elders are proud very proud of what Radmila has done, as we all are. Radmila is a biracial woman who continues to touch the lives and heal the hearts of her supporters. And, you know, her father is African American, and her clan and her nation is Navajo. And she was crowned, in a manner of speaking, the 46th Miss Navajo Nation, and served in that capacity 1997 through 1998. So welcome to Talking Feather Radio, Radmila.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Yes,
so
it's
nice to be on your show, Penny and Thunder Williams. And hopefully we can get Mr. Nottage on air here soon.
I think he's here, hopefully. Greetings.
Hi.
James Nottage, are you with us?
I'm with you. Thank you.
Oh,
yay.
Wonderful. Yay.
Hooray, hooray for technology. And, you know, it's like, oh, my goodness. Well, you know, they started a revolution in Egypt with Twitter and Facebook, and I guess we can not start a revolution tonight, but certainly have a very profound discussion and a fun discussion about red and black and how we are related through history right here on Blog Talk Radio. So, James Nottage, why don't we start with you as the chief curator of the Edel Jorg Museum. Tell us about the exhibition that we have described, this red, black, related through history, which, as we said, is this object-based exhibition on this subject that was created through your efforts and the efforts of many others.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity. It's, you know, everyone is looking at February as Black History Month, but we're reminded that this history passes through the entirety of every year, and the founder of Black History Month was also the founder of the Journal of Negro History, who in 1920 wrote that the story of the interacting history of African and Native Americans was a story that needed to be told. That was 98 years ago. And in just in the last 15 years or so, there's been a huge growth in really wonderful books by great scholars exploring the subject. And we've been privileged to work with many of those scholars and to undertake a search for objects which tell us about this shared history. So objects such as a Cherokee dance mask, the name of the mask is White Man Introducing Slaves to the Cherokee. It's through objects like that that cultures provide commentary about the relationships that they develop. And it's through other kinds of objects. We have a wonderful basket made by a Cherokee African slave from the Van Plantation in Georgia. And it has a startling similarity to the very traditional baskets of the Gullah people who introduced rice culture from Africa to the Carolinas. So this intertwined history is fascinating. It requires communication between cultures and communications across disciplinary lines as we look at art history, history, cultural history. It's a terrific topic.
Yes, well, we know that since the arrival of Christopher Columbus in the Americas, that great pirate, some people think call him a discoverer, that the lives of Native and African people have been closely intertwined. I mean, we've intermarried, we've established communities, shared lives and traditions, and all of this out of this environment that was quite racially motivated laws that oppressed and excluded both Natives and Africans and enslaved them. And out of this oppression, in a manner of speaking, comes this blended tribes that worked together to preserve their land and rebelled and many, many things. And that story, that wonderful story that has not been fully explored, and I think people are in many instances maybe afraid to explore that story because of shame of themselves or guilt and shame for what they have done, depending on what side of the equation you stand. But talk to us about what else is included. I mean, Indivisible Another exhibit is also part of the Red and Black related through history. Talk to us about that also.
Oh, thank you. Yes, and I know, of course, that Penny was deeply involved in the development of Indivisible. We send a staff person to work with our colleagues at the National Museum of the American Indian and shared research information with them. Some of the topics that are covered by Indivisible, we expand in different ways so that a panel from Indivisible talks about the civil rights movement, for example, and connections between African and Native American people. What we've added to that is original posters from the American Indian movement and the Black Power movement, graphic images that help to share those areas in which the groups connected with each other. It's an incredible story from the earliest point to today, and it's a story that, of course, it continues as people discover their own heritage. But the ironies of some of the stories, when King Philip's War took place in Massachusetts, Europeans conquered Native people. Some of those Native captives at that time were loaded on ships and taken, in some cases, to Africa. How ironic is that? And the shared experiences, positive and negative, are just part of coming to grasp with this story.
Well, one of the things that I want to say in terms of this topic, and especially being a blended person myself, is it is very emotional. And it just having discussions with people about it conjures up and brings up a lot of pain for some. And, you know, it takes a lot to work through a lot of the memories, and perhaps it's generational in terms of how people feel about this subject. But one of the things that I would like to ask you is, how did you, what made the museum decide to take on this particular topic?
Well, we began exploring the idea in 2001. We received a National Endowment for the Humanities consultation grant and brought to the museum a number of important scholars. Taya Miles was one of them, Claudio Sant and other important scholars exploring these subjects, and explored the content of the show and ideas of whether it was producible as an exhibition. And it was really the research that began with that that confirmed our interest in the subject. And since then, we've done other small shows. We've featured the work of Valina Dismukes, who's a wonderful photographer, exploring the subject through images of people with blended heritage. And we've just continued that dialogue. Every year in Indianapolis, we have a terrific Indiana Black Expo program, and we've done four or five exhibits at the Expo that have allowed us to interview people and to talk about their stories. And it is a very personal subject. I've done other radio interviews this week, call-in shows in this area. People will call in, and every single one of them wants to talk about some aspect of their history and how do they find out more. So it's a part of revealing that subject and helping people to explore their history, but it's also for people who are not Native or African American or of blended heritage. We need to help other people understand that this subject matters to them also, that we all tend to judge other people by what they look like, and we need to step back and let other people speak for themselves and say who they are.
This is really an important point. Self-identification, how one identifies themselves, especially with a connection to their community. And when you have people who don't understand the history, who just go by the physical, as opposed to really understanding that particular history in that particular part of the country. I know on the East Coast, especially in New England, a lot of people still don't believe or even think that there are Native people in New England, in Massachusetts and Rhode Island and Connecticut And it's always amazing, but that's one of the reasons why it's so important to get this story out and continue a dialogue.
Well, you know, James Nottage, this, as Penny is pointing out, it's a very exciting topic. It's a very enlightening exploration, but it's also very provocative and very hurtful. And I know you've been working on this, as you said, for many years, since you got the National Endowment for the Humanities Consultation Grant, which was awarded in 2001. In your research and of the histories and of African Americans and Native Americans and the interviews that have been done, what is the sense that you get about how people are accepting or rejecting or discombobulated, so to speak, by this presentation?
Sure.
Because everyone is not happy for different reasons to see this history resurfaced.
Sure, and it's understandable, and of course those reactions often are governed by where someone lives and what part of the country. Today, there are still major issues about the descendants of former slaves among the so-called five civilized tribes, mostly in Oklahoma now, and issues about whether those descendants should or do have rights as tribal members. Just 3 weeks ago, a Cherokee tribal judge turned over a new law in 2007 that took those rights away from the Cherokee freedmen and re-granted them. So it's a very current issue that can be very painful for people who, in a way, might be denied their heritage or people who have the opposite point of view. I hear the hurt from some people, but I also hear the pride and the gratitude, the people who relied on one another across cultural differences to survive, and that's part of the story too. And I think that is a part of the story that is beginning to influence people's willingness to open up and at least hear the history and sometimes tell about their own part of it.
And it is such a beautiful story. It's a powerful history, and it's very much the fabric of this country and really of this hemisphere, because we're talking, you know, Alaska all the way down to the tip of South America. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I want to do now is to talk to Radmila Cody. You have had an incredible life. You're using your talent, you're using your music to relate and to bring this positive energy to people that you come in contact with, young people and just the communities at large. But talk to us about your beginnings.
First, I like to formally introduce myself in Navajo, because that's what we do. So I'd like to say Yat'e, Anasodaisanos A'i, Hadonen, Shinigi Eg, Ashchin Shlon, Nahile, Bashish Chain, Nakirine, Dashichain, Nahile, Dashinalakta'e, San Shle. I am of the Red Bottom People Clan, born for the African American, and my maternal clans are of the Mexican clan, and my paternal clans are of the African American, and this is how I identify myself as a woman. So thank you again for having me on your show, and I'm glad Mr. Nottage was able to get on air, because this is really good, valuable information that we all need to hear and embrace. But for myself, as a Native American, African American woman, I was very blessed to have a beautiful, strong, loving, caring, compassionate woman. That woman being my grandmother, who's 96 years old, named Dorothy Cody, raised me. And my mother had me at a very young age. So when my mother, you know, brought me into the world, my grandmother had heard through, you know, her children that my mother was going to put me up for adoption. And so my grandmother followed her to Tuba City, where I was born, on Navajo, and and you know, was there when I was brought into the world, but little did my grandmother know that I would be a little, you know, half Navajo and half Black baby. And so my grandmother brought me home, and she raised me, and my mom, you know, she left, but she always still was a part of my life. She just was living out her youthful years because she had me at such a young age. And my grandmother taught me the life-sustaining methods of the Diné, you know, the Navajo people. And one of the main things that she really stressed and emphasized to me was the language, the importance of maintaining the language and learning it and holding on to that. And so, you know, my grandmother doesn't speak. She doesn't speak or understand English. So that was our source of, that is our source of communication. And my grandmother dealt with a lot of, you know, people, her, you know, our own relative community members who, and this is what she shared with me, that would tell her and question her and ask her, why are you raising this half Black girl? You know, and, you know, our people are not going to be accepting of her. You know, they're not going to accept her. And it's, you know, why are you raising her? And my grandmother would always respond with, because she's my grandchild and I love her and I'm going to raise her. And so, growing up and, you know, going to school now, you know, and being in kindergarten and in first grade and going to the loop boarding school at the time, was very difficult, you know, because I was, you know, up until maybe my junior high year, there was another individual who was part Black who attended the boarding school, but I was the only one up until then. And so it was very hard. Every day I would be in tears because I was always having to stand up for myself. And you know, I mean, sometimes I would get into, you know, fist fights, you know, with the people because they would, you know, say things that were very hurtful. And they would use the name Jimmy, which is, you know, the name for African American, but it has been used now more in a sense that it's used in a derogatory manner, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up associating, even to this day still associate that name Jimmy as you know, something very negative. And so every day I would come home on the bus, and my grandmother knew the routine. She would wait right there by the door, and she would, you know, be waiting as I would come out, you know, get off the bus and in tears and cry, you know, and tell her, oh, in Navajo, Masane, Kutashisne, you know, I would say, Grandma, this is what they're saying to me. And she would just, you know, give me a big hug and tell me, Apinti Abasket, the next son, you know, let him talk. You are a Navajo woman, and this is how you've been raised. And so, you know, so I dealt with that, you know, pretty much all my life. You know, it's something that people, for some reason, seem to have a very difficult time accepting. And but, you know, as I got older I was still, my father was also, you know, in my life, and my mother, you know, associated with a lot of Black people, you know, in Flagstaff. And so I was very much so around the Black culture but I wasn't quite able to identify with it. I was, you know, in the midst of it, but it was very difficult for me to identify with it because I spent most of my life, you know, on the Navajo Nation and with my grandmother. And so, you know, so I even found that when I was with in the Black community that I had to stand up for myself as a part Native person, as a part Navajo person, because of the stereotypes that were associated, you know, with being part Native American. Mm-hmm. And then I'd go to the Navajo side. When I'm back home, you know, on Navajo, I'd have to stand up for myself for being Black, you know. So it was, I experienced a serious identity crisis, you know, as a result of that. And so it was very difficult. It was a very difficult upbringing, but thank God for my grandmother. I'm just truly grateful for her because she, no matter what, and still is, my rock and my foundation. And I remember asking her one day, Grandmother, did you foresee these challenges that lied ahead for me, you know, when you brought me back home? And she said, yes, I did. I did. And and that is why I have stressed and emphasized to you to you know, speak the Navajo language and never forget who you are and where you come from, you know, because I really, that those, her had those tools that she has handed down to me is what has helped me to look at myself in the mirror and say, you know what, you are who you are. And, you know, if nobody can accept that, then, oh, well, you know, this is who you are, and you need to be proud of that.
That's right. Walk tall and walk proudly. You know, this must have been really quite an adjustment, though, when you think about it, because you are a fluent speaker of the Navajo language. This is how you were raised. And then when you were, you know, in the city, in Flagstaff, you know, and you're with a lot of non-Native people, you have this language that it's a very much a part of you. You must have had this keen sense of, you know, the sensitivity in terms of how you adjusted and how you felt about things and how you saw things, because language is such a powerful part of the culture. It must have been quite interesting in a sense.
It was, but it was also just, I mean, it was a part of me, and it was nothing that I never, you know, I never questioned or anything like that. So, I mean, I found it funny a lot of times because, you know, I would be somewhere and I would just start talking Navajo to someone and they'd freak out. They would, oh my God, you know, you speak Navajo, you know, it was, and this is prior to, you know, me becoming Miss Navajo Nation. And I remember one time I was at a, I don't know where I was, but there was a bunch of vendors. There were some vendors that were selling their jewelry, and I wanted to get my little sister a little drum. And so I asked the guy who is Navajo, how much it costs. I said, how much would is your drum? And he said, oh, and then he leans over to his wife and he says, in Navajo, not the Inish, but the Shne, you know, should I tell her $20? And I was like, yes. You know, and he looked at me, and then, of course, I was like, oh, you know, and Navajo, and he looked at me, and it was so funny because he said to me, nowadays, you never can tell.
Well, that's a good one.
You know, I want to talk to you. That's a really great story. And Rad Melakoti, I want to talk to you about the fact that many regard you as a iconic embodiment, a poster child for this story about the blended cultures of the red and the black. And, you know, it's let's go back to your traditional upbringing. You were Navajo is not just a language for you. It was your first language, and English is your second language. You were raised in very traditional ways in every aspect. And yet, notwithstanding that, there was still a, how should I put it, maybe as you grew older or even as you were younger, as you describe, a reluctance to accept you, of belonging to the cultural community that you were so much a part of. It was who you were. It was who you are. And yet, what was it that caused you feel, to be shunned or not fully accepted within your own Navajo Nation?
Well, for one, you know, you look at me and you definitely see that I come from the black, you know, the black ancestry, I'm descended from the African Americans. And so at the time when I was growing up, it was very uncommon to see biracial, multiracial Navajo, and, you know, mixed with black. So when people would see me, they would think automatically black person, you know, because that's not something. I mean, you don't see too many. You know, at that time, you didn't see too many African Navajos, you know, on the Navajo Nation. And so being that it was something that was not a common thing to see, I think that that's right, you know, people, you know, just kind of right off the bat looked at that and you know, just were very, you know, and also too, black, the media plays a big role in how black people are stereotyped as well. And, you know, so and as well as Native Americans. So I think a lot of that ties into, you know, into why people also may have viewed, you know, me differently.
However you state it, however nicely we try to put it, it comes down, it seems, to the ugly reality that even though you were 100% culturally, you know, laced with everything Navajo, yet mm-hmm. the phenotype, the color of your skin, mm-hmm. the texture of your hair, I mean, that alone was enough to cause some people within the nation to have a reluctance, I mean, even children. And then, so that posed many challenges for you. And I want to ask you, what do you feel when we walk into this exhibit, Red and Black, you know, related to history? What is the message that you bring as a result of your experiences? I mean, you are a first-person historian, a first-person, you know, what should I say, a person who has felt the good and the bad and the ugly. So what message do you bring to, and what hope do we have that we can someday get beyond this legacy of oppression and genocide and psychic trauma that was hoisted upon us as a result of this colonial colonization in the Americas?
Well, unfortunately, it's gonna. I mean, it would be nice if it could all end tomorrow, but unfortunately, that's not going to be the case. Mm-hmm. But this exhibit, this Red Black exhibit, is definitely a great opportunity for people to realize that there are Black Natives out there, and that we do exist, and we are proud of who we are and where we come from. You know, and despite the fact that you may look at us and see a Black person, you know, the things that we carry, we value, and that is a part of our every being, you know, and so you know, it's just hopefully this exhibit, you know, will make people realize and acknowledge, you know that there are individuals who come from two beautiful cultures, you know, and people that, you know, are reclaiming their story and you know, this hidden heritage in itself, you know, is something that is going to reinstill in a lot of our people, especially our little ones, speaking on behalf of our little ones who are part Black and part Native American, will instill in them that sense of pride, that we'll look at our children for who they are and that we will be able to encourage them and empower them, you know, and say, you know what, you are a beautiful Black Native person. You know, and instead of shunning them and looking at them and judging them for the color of their skin, to say, you know, my baby, my child, you know, I'm going to teach you, just like my grandmother did, these tools of our people, you know, and so that this can be your shield, you know, and this can be your foundation, you know, and so it's really about what we are going to do with our future generation, because you see, it's more common now than it ever has, you know, than it ever, I mean, I'm not fully aware of, not fully knowledge of the, you know, knowledgeable of the history, but just seeing it more now, you know, and speaking, you know, from the Navajo Nation, I see more part Navajo and part Black kids now than I ever have, you know, and it's unfortunate that a lot of these kids still deal with racism and prejudices, you know. And so what are we going to do to help these children, you know? And this exhibit is a wonderful way to educate people and open people's eyes, open their minds, and hopefully open their hearts.
Yes, and I want to go, Penny, to James Nottage to get you back into our dialogue here in our discussion. you know, so much of this is embodied in the exhibition, but of course the exhibition can't tell the whole story. What do you see as the goal of the exhibit, and how are you telling the story? Because, you know, sometimes when you come straight at people with the stark reality and truth, it just, the cognitive dissonance is just too great for them to accept what they're seeing, what they're hearing. So how have you chosen to tell the story through this exhibition?
Well, and that is a challenge, and certainly a curator or curators in developing an exhibit have a voice. They have a lot of control over what's presented and what's said, but I always approach a show like this from the standpoint that my words can reflect truth as I understand it from being a historian, but the words of the people who are there are an important component of such a show. So through written quotes, we provide some of those words, but through audio material we do as well. As many people have realized, during the Great Depression, Roosevelt's WPA projects led to a lot of research, historians going out and interviewing pioneers. And one of the most telling documents is a series of interviews done in Oklahoma in the 1930s with former slaves of Native Americans. And and those are readily available on the Internet. Those interviews are available in at least two books now. But what we've done is we've taken elements of those very words from former slaves. We've hired some wonderful actors in our own community to represent their voices. And we give people a chance to sort of listen to what people said long ago. You're right. We can only tell so much of the story. We're providing samples of a history, and I hope that if we're successful at all, we help people to think, and we might motivate them to look further into the history or further into their own personal story. And there is a great willingness to share this history. And Red Mill, I want to thank you. You've worked with my staff and other people. I want everyone to know that through Red Mill's generosity, she's not just a role model, but she has loaned her dress from being Miss Navajo Nation, her sash, and the Navajo Nation Museum has loaned her crown from that. And these are all pieces that are both personal and public, and they help to tell the story.
Well, I wanted to go back to Radmila Cody and her telling the story through music. You know, Radmila, you shared with us how you were born and raised, but talk to us about those beautiful, picturesque plateaus of the Navajo Nation, where you were on those rolling hills, out alone, in a manner of speaking, with your sheep, literally, I mean, herding and doing different things, and how you found your voice to sort of, you know, use this shield and use music as a way of healing and yourself and others.
Well, the sheep were my first audience. I always have to give them props for that. So they were my first audience, and so I every morning I would go out and chase the sheep out of the corral, and in the evening time chase them back in. So I spent a lot of my childhood, you know, years inside of the sheep corral. And I would stand on top of the sheep corral, and I'd sing to them and entertain them. And as I got older, I got introduced to Whitney Houston and her music. And then she became, you know, my idol. And, you know, over time, I ended up, it was something that I knew I always wanted to do. But when I ran for Miss Navajo Nation, it was one of my talents, and also one of my talents that I did. And after I gave up my crown as Miss Navajo, that was one of the things that I wanted to do, was to record an album as a way of saying thank you to the Navajo people for supporting me and for standing by me, you know, during my term as Miss Navajo Nation. So it was my plan to to just do one album at that time. And once I did the first album with my uncle, Herman Cody, who is the composer of the of a majority of the songs that I sing, it led from that to people asking, when's your next album going to come out? And so we ended up doing another album and then another album, and then four albums later, you know, it just became something that, you know, I felt really good doing, because it was, for one, preserving the language for our young ones, and, you know, for two, music is a very important part of our culture. And, you know, it helps us to heal. It helps us to, you know, there's stories that are tied into, you know, our songs, and those stories have meaning and significance to it. And you know, when you listen to you know, the Navajo language in itself, you know, and just how beautiful it is. I mean, it's just, you feel really good from it. You know, it's a beautiful feeling that you get from listening to the Navajo music, the Navajo songs, and understanding, you know, the stories and the humors that are all tied into it, and sometimes just feeling, you know, the connection that you have to these songs. And I know these songs have helped me to get through a lot of challenges in my life, you know, my uncle Herman, you know, he's the mastermind behind the songs, and I'm the instrument, you know, and it's just about sharing, you know, these songs with people in the world, you know, and so it truly is a blessing. And I always thank, you know, the sheep and the goats for giving me that opportunity, you know, to perform to them, to realize, oh, okay, I can, you know, I can sing, and I love singing, and I enjoy singing to my sheep and goats. So, you know, it's something that I've always enjoyed doing since I was a little girl, and I'm glad that I have the opportunity to share that with, you know, not only the Navajo people, but, you know, everyone beyond that.
Well, Radmila, right now we're going to actually listen to one of your songs, and it's in the Navajo language, America the Beautiful. We're going to play that right now.
On the jaune go hoy a des yes na has da yes a hit ne na this da ti en hi fi sne as ni ke ke wit e ne ye ke ya ne ye ke ya da ti en in ha da han ya dot a ne ye as ka ne ja Hey, Yanemen, Ajit. On the Johnny Gonasco, Ati, Neha Pansa, Haske, Tato, Naha, Huntako, Yikato, Benie, Nehikea, Nehikea. As one holo, a joba a widiato, as woka denizen. On jone coni his as it neha a keta tesli, a yo a tane hot ninte, a shita penie. Nehikea, nehikea, ta ti ye ni ki ta horto, ta skoto che is ita, ayo pe nehe ho te zen. On jo ne go na se ho kos, a he he fa ha go. At eight on a scotten net, oh, ye go beha od ne. Ne ye kea, ne ye kea, tati ye ni ne fata halya. Dot a ne ye as ka ne ja, kea ne net a je.
Oh, man. my goodness. I have never, Robinda Coley and James Nottage, I have never heard America the Beautiful sung with such a pure, crystal, clear vibration of just joy, and just it's just wonderful.
Quite beautiful.
Thank you. Thank
you. And, you know, Mr. Nottage, one of the things that you were doing in telling this story, and our stories are who we are, and without our stories, we are damaged goods, we are dysfunctional people, and one of the things that colonization did quite deliberately was rip us away from our story, from our culture, from our language. And one of the things that you are inserting to rekindle the story with this exhibition are live performances. Talk to us about those things. And I believe Rodmilla is one of the performers coming up in the spring.
Oh, absolutely. Rodmilla will be with us on March 19th. Be lecturing and performing in concert. We're all very excited about that. And after hearing that recording just now, I reaffirmed the fact that I can't wait. But we've tried to create programming that helps to connect with the culture through music, cultures through music in many ways. For example, we have a jazz concert with Blair Clark, who is Chippewa African American, with his jazz blues band in April. We have an electroacoustic concert in April also with Adam Revere. We have a cappella African American folk songs with the Freetown Village Singers from here in Indianapolis. You know, listeners can go to our website and see a full list of programs. I'm not going to read them all, but for anyone who can be with us this coming weekend, we have a mixture of both African and Native drumming, for example, African and Native dance. The expressive arts will be very much part of the show.
And speaking of websites, while you're mentioning that, what is the website where folks can just peruse all of this information and get more information?
Surely, absolutely. Well, the Idle Jorg Museum website is simply www.eiteljorg, that's eiteljorg.org.
Okay, eiteljorg.org, eiteljorg.org.
Correct.
Rodmilla, what are you feeling, I mean, when you are expressing your story through this music? Because obviously you have chosen a particular mode of expression with your music. I mean, you are singing in your traditional language, in your traditional, with your traditional customs, et cetera, and so forth. Talk to us about that.
Well, it is a beautiful feeling, you know, when I perform. I love, you know, singing, and so when I'm singing, and especially to the elders and to the little ones, and to the, and, you know, to the Navajo people, and to non-Navajos, you know, it's a really good feeling that you know, that comes with that. And I look at, you know, I think every time I see my grandmother, I'm just always so proud, you know, and so blessed that she's the person who, and I hope I don't get emotional. I'm going to get emotional. you know, that she's the person who, you know, without her, I really wouldn't be where I'm at today.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm just very, very grateful, you know, to her for one, believing in me, for loving me, you know, for just always being there for me and standing up for me, you know, and instilling in me, you know, this sense of pride that I have to be, you know, a Navajo Black woman. And I just, you know, I'm very, very blessed, truly blessed to have her and my mother, you know, my family, my relatives, and, you know, and the Navajo people, you know, for their support and beyond. So it's to me, it's a gift that I have been given, you know, from the Creator, and it's something that I value very much. And I just use it so that I can reach out and share that, you know, with others.
And
hopefully they feel good. from
yeah,
it.
Yeah, speaking of reaching out and sharing with others, I mean, you have a documentary coming up or a documentary entitled Hearing Radmilla, produced and directed by Angela Webb, that
mm-hmm.
explores your journey as an activist and a performer. And there's a part of this, you know, you've had many challenges throughout your young life, and you have, you know, resolved those in a very favorable way. Talk to us about this activism and another passion that you have beyond just performing, because I know that you do a lot of work with people that have been the victims of domestic violence.
Mm-hmm. Well, I speak out as a survivor of domestic abuse and violence, and I share my personal stories and experiences with, you know, from the young to, you know, to the old, and really encourage, you know, people to learn about, to educate themselves about domestic abuse and violence, and to talk to their children about it, as teen dating violence has become very prevalent within school systems. So each year, in this month, the month of February, I go out and team up with the Navajo Nation domestic violence organizations, as well as the Arizona Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And we go out and we talk to our youth about teen dating violence. And this is you know, something that I'm very passionate about, and I, you know, really want people to understand, because domestic abuse and violence is something that people look at as, they look at it as, well, if she keeps going back, then she must enjoy getting, you know, beaten or abused, you know, and people don't stop and realize that even in that thought in itself is abusive. You know, and that we have to, understand this very important issue at hand that affects all of us as a society. You know, and it's something that we really have to take on and be a part of in regards to bringing change, you know, amongst ourselves, within ourselves, in our community, and, you know, and understand that it comes in every way, shape, or form, and it doesn't discriminate. You know, if you're being abused mentally, physically, emotionally, even on a spiritual level, your religion and you know, someone isolating you, it's abuse. You know, the way you talk to a person, you know, belittling them, degrading them, it's abuse. You know, and even the sexual assaults and abuse that's tied to that. And so it's very important that we understand, you know, as a society and as individuals, that, you know, we deserve respect. And if no one, if someone who is in our life, you know, whether it's our significant other or boyfriend, girlfriend, you know, family member, if they're disrespecting us and abusing us, that, you know, we don't need to put up with that, and that there are resources available. You know, so it's about educating ourselves. Knowledge is power when applied, and that's something that, you know, we have to take on, you know, within ourselves, just like any other issue in this world that we are ignorant to. You know, we have to take on, you know, break down those ignorances and educate ourselves, because I was ignorant at one time when I was going through that, and I had to break down what ignorances I had towards, you know, domestic abuse and violence, and understand and gain that knowledge in order for me to not only help myself, but to also educate and help others. So it's very, you know, important that we do it, so that we have, you know, a much safer community, and you know, we do this for our children and our future generation. So
this is so powerful, your message, and the fact that the Great Spirit has blessed you and you're using your gifts to inform and to educate and to help other people and by example. And that's wonderful. We have a lot of people in the chat room, and people have made some wonderful comments, you know, not only about your music, but your message, and about grandmothers. And then there was one, kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of how people treated you, you know, within your own community. Somebody had a question about, if a person were Navajo and maybe European, would that have made a difference?
I, in all honesty, I really don't know. Because there's so many different angles that you can look at in that regard. And I think that, to be honest with you, I really think that you probably, if the individual was part Navajo and part white, they probably would have been a little, you know, more accepted than myself. But then at the same time, I was given an opportunity by Navajo people. They were judges. They were all judges, you know, and I think that, you know, just that in itself should say something, you know, because when you think about it, they really didn't have to choose me. They didn't have to select me, but they did.
That's true.
And they looked past my, you know, me being part Black and said, you know what, she clearly understands our way of life and our culture and our language. So for them to look beyond my color and to say, okay, you know, she's proven to us that she can do this, and to crown me as Miss Navajo, it probably wouldn't have made a difference. And you know, but again, you know, I think looking at it from that standpoint, I think that in itself should tell you, because you know that says a lot for them to have crowned me. And knowing that they were even themselves taking that chance to to crown, you know, that in the controversies that would have come with that. But they were obviously looking at, you know, what it really was about as far as, you know, the pageant in itself and what it had to take to become this Navajo Nation. And in our culture, if you come from, in my case, my mom being Navajo and my father being African American, you carry on the lineage, you know, the matrilineal line that stems from the mother. And that was one of the things that was brought up during the controversy when I held the title as Miss Navajo. And, you know, that's something that, because when I acknowledge myself and say my clan, I acknowledge my grandmother, my mother, and the clan, you know, that stems through them.
So, right.
And then I acknowledge those that I'm born for, which is my father, you know, the African American. So to answer the question, probably not. I don't think it really would have made a difference, because if somebody was, you know, if an individual was part Navajo and part Black, and they went in there and they whipped out the fry bread and butchered the sheep and spoke fluid Navajo and, you know, showed the judges that they themselves were, you know, a very proud Navajo woman, also from the, you know, the white background, I'm sure she would have gotten selected too, because at the end of the day, that's what they really focus on and that's what they really look at.
Beautiful.
You know, James Nottage, I don't know if you might have something to add to that, you know, from the exhibition. Some of the historical underpinnings of what got us to this point where we are in modern and contemporary society today, still divided, the racial legacy has still kept us looking at each other with mistrust. And, you know, that question about, well, that came from the chat room, well, you know, what if you're Black and Indian, you have one set of things to deal with, but if you're European and Indian, somehow it's okay. I mean, does any part of the exhibit touch upon those kinds of historical underpinnings and what caused that?
Well, I'm afraid it doesn't. In a direct way, I think people's willingness to misunderstand based on preconceived notions is something as old as humankind. And, you know, there are people with mixed heritage who may be Native and Jewish, for example, and that's been an issue for people under certain circumstances. It's ideas of race, and what we point out, and what I'm happy to say scholars more frequently point out, and the public hopefully is going to realize, is that the ideas of race are artificially constructed. You can't define race scientifically. It's something that comes from cultural feelings and biases. And I suppose if our exhibit really is successful, it helps people to understand that bias grows out of something that's human-made. It's not biological. So I hope we're successful with that.
Yes, you know, one of the things Penny and Rodmella and James I wanted to mention is when we talked about these things, Penny, when you and I worked on as co-curators and community curators on the Indivisible exhibit that's part of the whole Red and Black Related Through History, we talked about these issues and these policies, these racial policies and that kept people divided. And one of them that comes to mind are the Virginia slave codes that define the status of slaves and their rights and the rights of their masters. And in talking about matrilineal, in 1622, Virginia passed a law on partus, P-A-R-T-U-S, stating that children of an enslaved woman would follow the mother's status and automatically be a slave, no matter if the father was a free Englishman. So, you know, when we look at things like that and we go to 1705 with Virginia's definition of slaves, quote, all servants imported and brought into the country who were not Christians in their native country shall be accounted for and be slaves. All Negro, mulatto, and Indian slaves within this dominion shall be held to be real estate. So here we have this enslavement between Negroes, mulattoes, Africans, and Indians, and whites that gives this opportunity for blood mixing, and then the other shoe drops with the one drop rule. And that rule that part of the big part of the colonial slave system and later the Jim Crow segregation, which was systematically employed to strip Indians of their identity, and it decreed that a single drop of black blood, no matter how remote, or a single ancestor who was African, made an individual of mixed race black. And so as a result of that and many other things, Indians became classified as colored or Negro.
And this happened up and down the East Coast, and then you had the Racial Integrity Act in Virginia with Walter Plecker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now we talk about going, Virginia has just got such a history, but, you know, in Virginia, Penny, talking about Native Americans with a white admixture were declared the Pocahontas exception. So here we have the Virginia General Assembly declared that a person could be considered white as long as they had no more than 1/16 Indian blood. So many influential Virginia families claim descent from Chief Powhatan's famous daughter Pocahontas to avoid classifying themselves as non-white. And so therefore, I say, James, that, and this is what Indivisible touches upon as well as other things that will be, I'm sure, coming forth in the future, under the Pocahontas exception, a person with white and Indian admixture could choose to be either Indian or white, depending on the benefits that came with that choice. However, the same choice was not offered to other mixed-race people with Indian and African ancestry. So this, as you said, Penny, this Racial Integrity Act of 1924 reclassified mixed-race Indians on their birth certificates, marriage certificates, and census records as Negro or colored based upon phenotype, their facial features, their skin color, and their hair texture. And that's when Walter Ashby Plecker, the first registrar of Virginia's Bureau of Vital Statistics and a eugenist, in 1912, forced Indians to classify themselves as black. And so, you know, this and James Nottage, this Racial Integrity Act was not overturned until 1967, when it was struck down by the United States Supreme Court. But as we know, the damage had already been done. And Radmila, I think the things that we experience firsthand as mixed raced people with mixed ancestry and multicultural people, I mean, it's clear where this originates and how it originated. And even into modern and contemporary times, James, we are still trying to heal from that racial legacy.
We're still dealing with the residue of the past, and that, of course, is why it's so important to know about that past.
Yes.
Well, we have someone, I believe, who has a question. That's I believe they're calling from Massachusetts, and I'm going to see if I can bring them up. Hello, do you have a question?
Hi, my sister. This is Donna from Fall River.
Oh, greetings. Aquane.
I want to thank everybody for being part of the show, number one, and delving into a subject that is so long overdue. And the question that I have is, do you think if we can plant the seed of every individual family doing research on their own families, that they will, in fact, see the interconnection to all of us that came to Turtle Island or that were on Turtle Island, and how we're all interconnected? And let me give a little reason why I'm asking this question. I was in a cultural rhetorics class, and one of the projects in the class was to find out about your own family. And it was so shocking that so many people of European descent didn't even know that they were Irish and Scot, or Irish and German, or Irish, and because they hadn't spoken to their elders, they hadn't taken the time to learn their own family history, or it hadn't been passed down to them. And I think that is the door that opens the heart to everybody, when everybody realizes that we all are from and of each other.
Yes.
So I just want to put that out
there. Yes, thank you so much for that comment and for calling in and joining our Indigenous Circle. And I'd like to invite Radmila or James Nottage to add anything that they would like to add to that comment or sentiment.
I'll defer to Radmila first, if I may.
Yes, Radmila.
Radmila, I was waiting for you, James.
You are used to being on stage. This is nothing new for you. You have sung to the sheep and you have sung to the masses. So,
right. I agree with her. I think at the end of the day, We are the five-fingered people, and when you think about it, when we start placing these kind of categories or races, and I mean, we cause division, and it's just something that it would be nice to just be able to look at somebody and just say, you're my brother, you're my sister, without looking at someone and saying, well, you don't look Native American, or you don't look Black, or you don't, so it's just always, if we could just put that aside and just respect each other for, who we are as human beings. And, I think that this world would definitely be a much better place. And I, as she was expressing that, I was thinking about a quote that I put on my Facebook today. And that quote says, "The color of the skin makes no difference. What is good and just for one is good and just for the other." And that was quoted by Chief Whiteshield. If we could just really do what my grandmother did and just focus on, the love and the compassion and, looking beyond color lines and just saying, this is my granddaughter and I love her and I'm going to raise her to the best of my ability and let it be that. And, you know, I think it's about love at the end of the day and recognizing
it really
that,
is.
And that. It really is.
It really is. Well, Rad Miller, we're going to play another selection, and it's called Tears. And here it goes.
She sits on a hill behind her childhood home. Stares onto the land afraid alone. A heart that bleeds from life's experience, trying to understand much of its predicament. She looks into the sky with hopeless care. Creator, she says, I need you here. Her cry remains an unheard call. It's then she sheds a tear to understand it all. A tear of joy and love and pain. This is her time, her place, her strength. One day she'll look back at life's trials and tests. Remember that tears of a woman is her inner divine at its best. Strong and loving, forgiving, so true. Loyal and giving, unfaltering. Stand beside her children and husband so dear. No matter what the cause or circumstances, her love remains as wisdom to share as a mother of memory so sweet, for it is her love that is her weakness. Each time she sheds a tear, unconditionally, a tear of joy and love and pain. This is her time, her place, her strength. One day she'll look back at life's trials and tests. Remember that tears of a woman, a tear of joy and love and pain. This is her time, her place, her strength. One day she'll look back at life's trials and tests. Remember that tears of a woman, and remember that tears of a woman is her.
That is beautiful. You know, tears of love, joy, and pain of the woman shared unconditionally. Talk to us about the message and the story behind that song.
Well, Tears is a song that I wrote when I was going through a lot in my life. And when I wrote the song, I actually thought about the women in my life, you know, my grandmother, my mom, my aunts, and then from, you know, that point, just, it's just women in general and what, you know, just women, you know, and the things that women go through and endure, but yet as women, we're so strong, we're so sacred, and you know, and when we connect to that strength and that beauty within us, that power that you know, that the Creator has given us, you know, in a sense that we're life givers, and you know, something that you know, men don't have no idea about, you know, in regards to how, I mean, we have such a beautiful way of handling pain, and you know, and in such a wonderful way, you know, in a way that we're able to bring life into this world, and you know, but yet we are able to experience that. I'm not a mother yet, but just having witnessed my mom, you know, having my little sister, just in you know, friends of mine, you know, who brought, you know, life into this world, it's amazing, you know. And I think, and aside from that, ultimately, just having gone through domestic abuse and violence, and looking at where I once was in my life and where I am today, you know, and being able to find that strength within too. It's just amazing when you choose to better yourself from challenges or adversities in your life. It's amazing when you look back at those challenges and adversities, you know, where you're at today because of it. And I'm, you know, even if I had my hardships, you know, in my past, I'm grateful for those hardships, because I wouldn't be who I am today as a result of it.
Yes. Oh, well, you know, James Nottage, I think that what Radmila Cody is expressing on an individual capacity in a manner of speaking is so apropos in my mind to this exhibit, Red, Black, Related Through History, because, you know, there are tears that are being shed here, and there's a lot of healing that has to go on, and this pushing up this history, pushing up this knowledge, as Carter G. Woodson said, that this whole relationship that was rich heritage that was forged from the relationship between red and black people is, quote, one of the longest unwritten chapters in the history of the United States. And there's a lot of, and that's the end of that quote, and there's a lot of pain here in the Americas, because I feel that we are in denial of so much of our history. I mean, Europeans, perhaps too many Europeans, are feeling a shame and a guilt for the acts that have been perpetrated on indigenous people from Africa and the Americas. And many indigenous people are feeling shame and a lack of identity because they have been torn from their stories and are facing, as Radmila said, in some portions of their life, a real identity crisis. So I'd like you to speak to the goal of this exhibition, and what you hope to achieve by pushing up this history and this knowledge so that people can have a chance to embrace it and acknowledge it.
Sure. Well, thank you. And thank you for using the Woodson quote. That's actually a quote that is in 6-inch-high letters as the opening of this exhibit. I mean, this is a man who created Black History Month, for heaven's sakes. He was a very sage scholar of the history. And I think in looking at quotes like that, you know, philosophically, I believe any museum can do its job well if what they provide is a forum for the public to express itself. And I think that's an incredibly important part of what I hope people do in this exhibit. We do provide them with a place where they can write their own thoughts. We want them to become more conversant with their own history. And, of course, I wasn't trying to sidestep the caller earlier. I think what strikes me is that all people, whether they're Native, African, European, whatever their heritage is, that we all have far too little knowledge about our own past, and that it's not just knowing about our individual past, but it's understanding the past that other people have gone through. And I think the NMAI exhibit, Indivisible, addressed this very simple point in a very nice way, and that is the idea that tribes as nations have a right to say who is a member of those tribes, but people as human beings have the right to say who they are from their point of view.
Yeah.
And I would like to see people come out of this exhibit that acknowledging other people's rights and becoming more aware of what they should know about themselves.
Yes, and one of those 20 panels that make up the Indivisible NMAI exhibit that was co-sponsored by the National Museum of African American History and Culture, Lonnie Bunch, and cites the Smithsonian traveling exhibit people, is this concept of being and belonging. And, you know, we all have this human need to be who we are and to belong. And so we have to understand this rich history that has been redacted. We have been, in too many instances, written out of history, but we are still here. And so, and it's a wonderful thing because we can all hopefully be able to step to the table and ask ourselves this question: are you part something or are you part of something? I mean, so I don't want to go around the rest of my life saying that I am part Indian, I'm part Carib, I'm part African, I'm part European. I'm all of those things, but the real question is, am I part of something? So I think, again, it's like in Radmila Cody's example, she is not part Navajo. She is the embodiment of the Navajo nation. I mean, she is part of something, and so many of us who have been stripped of our story want to, so many African Americans who want to claim their native heritage want to be able to step back into that indigenous circle and be one with their native brothers and sisters. So I think it's going to benefit all of us, and Europeans, African Americans, Native people, for all of us to, as Radmila says, take this knowledge and not just have the knowledge, but apply it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a question here. Let me bring this up. Somebody has a question. When we are put in a position to bridge the gap between two peoples, what's the best way to do that?
Go ahead, Jane.
In a position to bridge the gap between two peoples, what is the best way to do that? If only there was just one right answer.
I know. It's like, let us count the ways.
Uh-huh.
I believe one way, James Nottage, I think you could probably speak on that, and that is creating an exhibit.
A living exhibit.
A living
exhibit with people like yourself participating and Radmila Cody and many others. But Radmila, do you have anything that you would like to add to that? How can we bridge that divide? I mean, how did you bridge that divide in trying to overcome your challenges?
Well, I would say that I'm still bridging that divide. I just used the opportunity to, I think, for one, the music has really helped me, and having been Miss Navajo Nation has really helped me, but just really instilling in our young ones the importance of, you know, of tolerance and teaching our young ones to, you know, to love and to be respectful of other people. I mean, to me, it's always going to go back to the basics. Because that's how my grandmother raised me. You know, she's always taught me to, you know, to be loving, compassionate, and to have respect for people. Because if you don't, somewhere along the line, it's going to come back as a lesson for you too, anyway. So, you know, it's something that, you know, we have to, as human beings, just really, you know, learn and open our world up to other people's cultures. There's so many cultures around us, you know, and it's about embracing that and respecting that and valuing that, you know, and saying, you know what, that is beautiful. You know, I know I listen to music from Africa that I don't even know what they're saying, but I'm dancing to it and I'm feeling it because, you know, it sounds beautiful. And that, I mean, just things like that, you know, and knowing that there's a much bigger world out there with beautiful culture and languages that, you know, we can, you know, embrace and be a part of.
Yes, food and art, and it goes on and on, and it's that's what makes us all so connected to each other because there's so much to learn from one another.
And one of your musical supporters, your cohort, your uncle has said something I found to be very interesting about you, Radmila Cody, as you sing music in the traditional way. He tell us about that comment he made about how you have brought a new dimension to traditional Navajo music.
Well, he got, I remember, I think it was on NPR he got interviewed, and he mentioned on there, they asked him, well, what would you call the kind of music that Radmila is singing? And he said, I call that Navajo soul.
Navajo soul.
He calls it Navajo soul.
Well, I think that wraps it up, Penny, in a beautiful way. It puts the icing on a beautiful little mixture that we put together here this evening in our indigenous circle, Navajo soul, taking the traditional Navajo with that blended culture from your African-American father and taking it to another level, you know? It's beautiful.
Well, I want to ask James Nottage if you could give us some closing thoughts, something that we can all take with us to heart.
Well, I hope so. And what I'm really feeling is the nature of your program that has a connection with the exhibit that I think is kind of a pretty way to think about it. Just as you use the idea of the talking feather, right at the end of this exhibit, in an exhibit case, you'll see an African talking staff or speaking staff and a Native American speaking staff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of this subject is about allowing and helping other people, sort of getting back to that last question, allowing and helping other people to grasp the feather or the staff and have an opportunity to speak. And I thank you all for what you do to help make that possible.
Well, thank you for joining us this evening and taking the time, you know, that you spent with us. And if you could just give information again about the museum and the exhibit.
Sure. Red, Black, Related Through History opens at the Idle Jordan Museum this Saturday, February 12th. It runs through August 7th. We welcome people. We encourage people to come. We're kind of in the middle of America. We're at the crossroads, as we say. And if people want to visit our website, it's www.idlejorg.org. The details are there. Come out this summer and join us during Black Expo, or come the weekend after Father's Day for our annual Indian Market and Festival, a gathering of many tribes, and we'll share our stories with each other.
Thank you so much, and I look forward to meeting you because I will be there Friday and Saturday speaking and being a part of the opening, so I so appreciate the fact that I can be a part of it.
Well, we're
looking forward to
it.
Yes. All right. Well, thanks again.
Well, you know, we also want to say that the EITEL is EITELJORG, EITEL Jorg Museum, that's idlejorg.org. So please make yourself, make that resource available to you. And Radmila Cody, in case people want to somehow get more information about you, and I'm sure they do, and maybe partake of some of this wonderful music, how might they do this?
They can go to my website, which is www.rad, R-A-D as in David, M-I-M as in Mary, I-L-L-A, Cody.net, radmilacody.net, www.radmilacody.net. And I just want to say thank you to James and everyone there at Edeljord Museum. I'm looking forward to seeing you all there next month, and also to you, Penny and Thunder Williams, for you know what you guys do on your show, and also to you know all my supporters and the Navajo Nation and Flushes Chinna, which is those that I'm born for, the African Americans. So thank you so much, everyone. Much love to you.
Much love to you.
And thank you for thank so you. Freely and generously, you know, sharing your story, Radmila, because it uplifts all of us and helps to, you know, illuminate the path forward, as does that wonderful exhibition that's going on at the Edeljord Museum, and together with that, the Indivisible exhibit that is sort of co-sharing a space during that exhibition. So thank you, everyone, for joining us this evening on Talking Feather Radio and stepping into our Indigenous circle.
And what we're going to do now is we're going to close with one of Radmila's songs, My Horses. Thanks so much. Wunish. Thank you, Radmila, for the beautiful music. I want to thank you all for being here with us here on the Talking Feather. And remember to love your children, embrace your children, respect the elders, honor the earth, and walk in balance on Mother Earth. Until we meet again, Wunish.